Now it is with great honor and privilege to introduce this morning's speaker, Jules, who will share her experience, strength, and hope with us.
Well, I'm Jules and I'm an alcoholic. And I don't like speaking, so thanks for having me. My sobriety date is October 31st, 2017. I just celebrated 8 years clean and sober. Yeah. All right. When I started drinking, I was 12 years old. I grew up in an alcoholic home. My father is a raging alcoholic. He has 19 years sober in this program now. And he was a very good role model for me getting sober. That wasn't how it was growing up. I had everything that I needed, food, bed, you know, all of those kinds of things. But what I didn't have was stability or a place that I could talk to people or felt open. You know, it was a very, what happens behind these doors stays behind these doors. Not allowed to talk about things, not allowed for people to know what was going on at our house. Or how bad his drinking was. We were like the greeting card family. You know, as long as we were smiling in all the pictures and we looked like this picture perfect, everything, that's all that mattered. It didn't matter if everything was falling apart. And that's how I grew up. I grew up always trying to minimize what people saw, you know, and just putting a smile on my face and trying to get through it. And I don't know how long I did a good job at that. I don't think I ever really did a good job at that, but I tried. My mom is a person that I love today. But she was always this, you know, glass house kind of person where it was like, the sun is always shining and puppies live forever. And as long as we just like brush all our problems under the rug, they go away. And I can't say she's not that way now, but I think my dad and I, you know, maybe took a little bit of that away from her. Growing up, I was always an anxious person. I have a lot of anxiety to this day. That never went away, that never left me, especially standing in front of people. That anxiety was almost too much for me to take a lot of the time. And I wanted to do things to get me out of my head. For me, alcohol was that. You know, I started drinking young. I found that when I drank, I felt less like me. But I didn't always make the smartest decisions when I drank. I wanted to drink until I didn't feel this anxiety, but that took a lot. And when I did, I put myself in situations that were risky, they were harmful. I got assaulted young. I think I was 14 years old, and I experienced a lot of violence, rape, all kinds of things that people don't talk about a whole lot, but that was my childhood, that was my teenage years. And what I did as a solution to that thing, instead of report it or tell somebody or get help, was drink more. Drink more, and then maybe you'll forget. Drink more, and then you won't worry so much. But when I drank more, I ended up back in the same kinds of places. And more things like that happened to me. And it was this vicious cycle. And I did not know how to protect myself. I ended up in relationships, just chaotic relationships. I didn't have self-confidence. I didn't have self-respect. I didn't have the things that made me feel safe. That was a word that I didn't believe in. Maybe other people could have that in their vocabulary, but not me. Girls like me didn't have that luxury. And what I would do is I would find these people that were outer manifestations of how I felt about myself on the inside. They were people who were physically and emotionally abusive. And I got to this point where I didn't want to feel anything. You know, which I thought if I just didn't show people how I felt, then they wouldn't know. You know, that I was afraid or that I was hurt or that I was anything. And so I stopped showing those feelings. and I put up all these walls and I boxed myself in. And I got so good at that that a lot of people didn't think I had any feelings at all. And I wish, you know, that that's something that you could just shut off when you wanted to. It wasn't. I got to this point where even when I wanted to let people in, I couldn't. I didn't know how to let you see me. I didn't know how to let you know me. I didn't know how to connect with anyone. And I felt more and more isolated. Today, I would say that I'm much more of an introverted person. I don't think that's how I started out as a kid, honestly, but I think I learned that. I learned to be that, because it was safer. It was safer for me to love people at a distance, and to know people at a distance, and not let them have that kind of, you know, vulnerability. I don't do vulnerable well. I don't. I'm still working on it. I did get to this point. No, nice. I did get to this point where it got so much for me that I knew I needed something different. I wish that I had found recovery, but that's not what I found. What I found was hard drugs, and I just added that to my alcohol. It wasn't a good night drinking, you know, if I didn't have like this 3-day hangover. If I could remember what I did, it wasn't good enough. I would always find out what I did later. People would be saying, oh, we were at this place or we were doing this thing. And I was like, I don't remember any of that. But it must have been good because I didn't feel like me. And, you know, I experienced so many things. I was on homeless for a long time. I ended up on the street. I ended up in places that nobody should be, doing things nobody should do. And I felt empty. I felt this dead inside feeling. I did not know, still didn't know how to connect to people. I pushed everybody away, anybody who wanted to get close to me. I had a child. I've had several children. I have 4 children today with 4 different men, and only one of those kids in sobriety. And I lost custody of all my children, except for my last one. It was just this up and down. I would get sober just when I was pregnant. I would last throughout that pregnancy, and then I'd be right back out again. I did not have emotional sobriety. I could white knuckle it, but I had no defense. And it didn't take much to send me back out there. Sorry. While I was out there, I moved up north from here up to Guerneville, California. And I did a lot of my using and my drinking there. It's a small town in the Redwoods, not much bother, like 4,000 population. And I ran amok there for a long time, in and out of jail, in and out of hospitals. I was unfazed by that. I ended up in some really bad relationships there that cost me a lot of things. Cost me custody of my children, cost me having a place to stay, cost me relationships with my family. I was in one relationship where, you know, I'm a mouthy girl and I say a lot of things. And I might know when to shut up, but I don't. And, you know, that cost me my teeth one night. And I remember that, having them knocked out of my mouth. And that didn't faze me either. Like, I wish I could say that it did, but all I could think about was that I was gonna get blood on my jacket, and it was my favorite jacket. And I knew I'd wear it anyway. That's how detached I was from everything. That was my actual thought while I was spitting my teeth out. I got to this point where I just felt like I couldn't trust anyone. nothing really mattered. I just was waiting to die. I thought, I'm gonna do this until I'm dead. My dad had gotten sober at this point. I knew that if I called him, I knew he would come. I knew he'd help me, but I couldn't do it. I felt so submerged in that life. It was messy and chaotic, and I didn't think that I deserved anything better than that. Nothing about my life told me that I did, you know, and I worked really hard to be a part of my kids' lives, even though I didn't have custody anymore. I dealt with CPS, I dealt with all these things, jumping through hoops, got into more, another relationship. It was like every 4 years I was in a new relationship with a new kid, with new everything, and I thought, this is gonna be the time that it's fixed. This is gonna be the time that everything gets better. And it didn't get better because I'm still me. And I don't know how to let people love me, whether their love is healthy or not. I don't know how to let people help me or protect me or do any of the things, because that's not the kind of person that I am. I'm a person who I would say attracts trouble, but I think a lot of that was me seeking it out. I didn't know any better. You know, I don't know how to make the smart, safe decisions. I just know how to just get to the next moment where I get a little further away from my feelings and a little further away from the accountability of whatever I just did. That isn't the person I am today, but that's the life that I led. And I was so desperate in those days to outrun all of these bad things, all this trauma, all this pain, all of these things, that I didn't realize while doing that I was outrunning all the good things too. And I left pieces of me everywhere scattered behind me, like everywhere. All the good things, all the fun moments, all the things that you don't want to miss about your children growing up. And if you have kids in this program, the younger they are, the easier they forgive you. My oldest is 19 years old, and it took a long time for her to get to the point that she is now. I'll talk about that later, though. I ran amok right up until, you know, I got arrested again. And that time, you know, many years into using and drinking, and I got to this point, right before the police knocked on my door, I remember having this feeling like, no matter how much I do, no matter how much I drink, I still have this void, I still have this empty feeling. And I was mad, and I was sad about it. It was like, look at all the things I gave up for this, and it doesn't even work, you know, and I was just left with me. I could not get far away from my feelings. I couldn't get far away from everything that my life was missing, and I was mad. And I remember turning to my partner and saying, aren't you tired of this? And right after I said it, there was that bang on my door, and probation was there to pick me up. And I remember panicking and feeling like, oh God, I don't want to go to jail, you know? But I could see how that was the universe intervening at exactly the time that I was ready. It was this acceptance, you know? And I got arrested for 6 out of the 10 violations you can have of probation. And I knew I was going, you know, and I remember feeling this weird sense of relief that I had never felt before going to jail. You know, I got there, like even on the way there, it was like this feeling. And yeah, that is definitely not how it had been in the past. It was always just get there, be restless, get out, go back to the same thing. You know, I had been living in this house that my family was nice enough to rent, not even rent, but to let me live in up there. And I had turned that house into a trap house. Like it was, we had no power, you know, we had no running water. We did have a car battery with some Christmas lights wired to it. Yeah, and like it was like wired so I could charge my phone. And that was it, like real ambiance, you know. And you don't need utilities. You don't need things like that when you have drugs and alcohol. At least for me. I'm not that classy a girl. I can get by on very little. It was not a good spot. There was all kinds of people there getting loaded all the time. I knew when the police came I was going to jail. Like there was no getting around that. And I did 45 days that time, which might not sound like a lot, but honestly, I wanted to be there longer. In Sonoma County, they have a rehab within the jail, and I applied to get into it. It's just a mod in the jail that they do recovery, and they do meetings, and they do classes, and they do all the things that a regular rehab would do, except you know, don't get to leave. And it helped me. I remember feeling this like clarity, like this feeling like the choice had been taken away, and I felt this relief. And then I worried about getting out. You know, I didn't want to get out. I didn't want to be in jail, but I didn't want to go back to what I'd been doing. And I knew that's what was waiting for me. And I'm not, you know, a religious person. I'm not any of those things. But I had this moment of surrender there, where I just said to the universe, whatever happens to me is gonna happen to me. I am not gonna fight these charges, and I am not gonna fight any of this. And I'm just, whatever they offer me in court is what I'm gonna take, whatever it is. And I knew, I was looking at like 6 years, so I knew that it could be a while. And I had this moment where I just felt more peace. I felt more peace knowing that. And they only made me do those 45 days, and I got out, but something was different. Something was different then, and I can't tell you what it was, I can't tell you what magic switch flipped, but I didn't want to use or drink. And I, in that very small town that I lived in, there were 2 meetings a week. There was no fellowship, there was no, you know, no events like this. There was nothing. There was 8 people. I was at both those meetings every week. I had to walk to them. I didn't have people in my circle who were like, oh, we'd love to take you to an AA meeting, you know? No. But I remember we had a big book meeting, and we had a speaker meeting, and that was it. And it was like, that big book meeting, out of the 8 of us, we didn't even have enough books for everyone to have a book. It's a very poor, you know, like, community. But I found my recovery there. I've been sober since there, you know. And I loved that meeting. I did my first 6 months of sobriety there. I needed something just to break up the monotony. You know, I was still in a trap house. Everybody was still using and drinking. My relationship that I'd been in for years, you know, everybody is exactly the same as I left it. The only thing that was different was me. I don't recommend that. But that's what I did, you know, and I stayed sober despite all of the things that everyone else was doing. It wasn't easy and it wasn't fun, but I did it. And I planned to move down to San Luis Obispo. My family was gonna help me move. I didn't know if that was a great idea, but I felt like I needed to get away from everything. And I ended up getting pregnant again. And my partner, who was still using, still drinking, he moved with me. And It was an experience. When I got down here, well, into San Luis Obispo County, I jumped into meetings. I went as many times as I could. Every day there was a meeting, and I found a home group, and I found a sponsor. I wasn't really great at asking someone to be my sponsor. I'd asked a few people. The moment that they said yes, I was happy. Then I'd go home, and then I'd go, Oh, they were just being nice. You know, they were just trying not to hurt my feelings. They didn't really want to sponsor me. I'm an inconvenience. And then I would never call them again. And I would just talk myself out of everything. And I met a woman at the Arroyo Grande South County Speaker Meeting, which I now secretary. And she knew my dad, and she asked me to meet with her. And she told me that I wanted what she had, and that she was gonna sponsor me. And that gave me so much anxiety, because she's a force. She's a force. And it was what I needed, though, because I'm a person who talks myself out of connection. I'm like, people don't really want to be my friend. They don't really want to know me. I'm a temporary person. You know, that's this voice in my head all the time. It's like, they like you for now. They want you around for now. But someday they won't. And then what are you going to do? Someday they'll see you like you see you. And for her to do that, for her to say that gave me no out of it, you know, and I needed that. I needed that. You know, people used to say, hey, I know your sponsor. And my eye used to start twitching. Like, I would have so much anxiety about the fact that they knew her. And it was nothing bad. It was just like, am I in trouble? Am I doing something? It was like, you know, my first 6 months down here, I couldn't share at meetings. I would sit, I would come like and sit in the room and I would pass. I did not know how to like open my mouth and share, because I thought the moment I share, they're gonna know how broken I am. They're gonna know that I'm too broken to be here, that I am not the kind of recovery, you know, this isn't gonna work for me the way it worked for them, and they're gonna tell me that. And I don't wanna hear it. I don't wanna hear it, because there's nothing else. You know, I'm not a person who has clung to hope her whole life. You know, I know what's waiting out there for me, though. I know I didn't get here because I was like, oh, this is gonna work. I got here because I was like, it's this or you die. It's this or you run your life into the ground so badly that you don't get up. That'll always be waiting. I don't want that life for myself anymore. I worked really hard with her doing the steps. She was kind and she was gentle, even in her intensity with me. I was so anxious, I couldn't even do step work. Like, she tried to have me meet her at a coffee shop. I couldn't do that. There was too many people. I tried to park, too many people. We ended up doing step work in her car. That's how we did it. We'd sit before the meeting and doing that like third step prayer and holding hands and saying it and doing things like that. But she met me on the level that I needed. And I don't know that I would be here today if she didn't. And, you know, I had danced with the program slightly, you know, on court cards. But I don't really talk a whole lot about it, because I would come right when the meeting started and I would leave right when it ended. And I would not hold your hand or pray out with you or do anything. I didn't identify, I just waited to leave. And then I would leave and say it didn't work. And I was like, I never did any of it. And this time I wanted to do it different. And I heard people come into the rooms and say, well, I worked a set of steps as honestly as I could the first time, you know? And I was like, oh, that can't be me. Because if this doesn't work the first time, I won't do it a second time. I won't be here. And so when I did my steps, I was brutally honest. I poured every bit of me into it because I needed to know. You know, I was like, I didn't want it to be for lack of effort and willingness. And it didn't happen overnight for me. It was hard. It was hard to let go of things. But I have a good sponsor, and she pushed me the way I needed to be. And I got to this point where I felt like I was okay. You know, like I don't even know exactly when it happened. I remember sitting on my couch and watching TV and then thinking about, man, I don't want to die. Like, I actually feel kind of happy right now. When did that happen? And it was just this very subtle, like, I'm okay to be me today. And maybe that isn't like the grand gesture of things, but that was a lot for a girl like me. That was a lot. And I got to make friends in this program. I remember my family was very unhappy that I was pregnant. Again, they were like, ah. And they didn't want to talk to me for a little while. But the women in the meetings, and I've never been great with women prior to this, you know, I just didn't trust people. And they swooped me up and they threw me a baby shower and I couldn't understand. You know, I was like, well, why would you want to do this nice thing for me? You don't even know me. But they did, and we played games and we did all these things, and it fractured me. You know, like, there's all these little moments that I can think of in recovery that just, these little cracks in those walls. And I slowly took them down. One of my favorite meetings I ever had was when I had the baby. And I couldn't leave the hospital. I had a C-section, and I was stuck there for a week. And on the second night, they brought a meeting into me. And it was like 6 or 7 people. And it was like a 2-hour meeting somehow. And I could barely share because I was exhausted. But I remember the fact that what that did for me is tell me that on that night, that these people could have been anywhere they wanted to be. They chose to be where I couldn't leave for me. And it made me feel so welcomed and a part of. And I'm never gonna forget that feeling. I had a lot of amazing things happen to me in recovery. My very first commitment, not first commitment, but my first secretary commitment. I remember I was in this meeting called the Back to Basics meeting on Thursday night in SLO. And that had been where I went with my sponsor for the first time, and it was just this little hole in the wall meeting. And I remember when they said they were gonna nominate a new secretary, and the whole room said that they nominated me. And I was like, what? I was so overwhelmed by that feeling. Like, it'll make me tear up because I'm a kid who gets picked last. I'm the kid who's like background noise, you know, like, and for people to say they wanted it to be me, to be chosen for something, to have a seat, to be a part of something, it was changing the way that I saw myself. It was changing these core things that I grew up with, right? These truths that I had held on to, they stopped being true. And every day that I'm in recovery, every day that I work an active program, every year is a little different, but I've learned that in recovery. I learned to be kinder to myself. I learned to be kinder to other people. You know, I am naturally a kind and loving person. I'm an inclusive person. I have an easy time fighting for others and a hard time advocating for myself. And most days that's okay with me, but in recovery at 8 years, I need to have healthy boundaries. I need to have the kinds of things that's just basic life stuff, you know? And that's the stuff that I wasn't good at. And I learned here how to make amends, how to say I'm sorry and mean it and do something about it. You know, the amends that I made to my child, to my children, my other kids were younger and they accepted it right away. I remember with my daughter, I took her to the ocean and she, you know, I told her how I owed her and how I was sorry, you know, and she didn't deserve the childhood that she had. And she said, I don't know if I'll ever forgive you. And I told her that she didn't have to, that I was not asking her to forgive me, that her feelings were valid. You know, and that girl today is one of my closest people. And recovery gave me that. It took a long time, and it took a lot of work, and it took a lot of showing her the kind of person that I am. And my first 45-minute share, she came and she sat in my front row because she asked to. And I was like, I don't know. But then she's my kid, and I couldn't say you can't be there. It was probably the best lead I've ever given because it was for her. Thanks. And her crying in the front row, and that kid doesn't cry. She's tough as nails, you know, and it meant everything. And we had this, you know, heart-to-heart, this connection. And that's been my journey in recovery. I sponsor women that I get to take through the steps and show up for and show them what people did for me. I'm not a perfect sponsor. I'm not a perfect person. I'm not a perfect friend. But I do my best, you know, and I know how to show up. And if nothing else, you know, there's that. And I think about all the moments that nobody showed up for me and I had nobody to call. And I used to have all of these moments in depression, in, you know, anger and all these things that I would think about how, if I died today, would anyone have really known me at all? And today they do. Today they do know me. And I'm the kind of person that I can look in the eye today. I don't have to hide from my past. I don't have to hide who I am. And I'm okay with who I am today. I went back to school in recovery. And that was a big thing for me because that was one of those truths. I was like, nah, I would go to school and then walk out. I would leave halfway through classes because I wasn't good at something or I had anxiety. And I didn't know how to handle life, so I just left. And going back to school for me was a big thing, you know, and I would take one or two classes at a time, and I worked really hard to get my degree. And I was so proud of myself when I did. And AA is the reason that I have that degree, because AA taught me not to give up. I remember the very first test that I took, and I didn't do well. And my first thought was, I'm gonna have to try harder. And I was like, where did that come from? I was like, that's not me. I promise, that's not me. That's recovery. Because somehow, the whole world doesn't have to be my people. Not everyone has to be my friend or like me or any of those things. But to know that I have people somewhere who know me, who see me, who get me, that's all that matters. Knowing that you guys exist, I take you everywhere. And I know wherever I go, no matter what town I'm in, wherever, my people are there. I just need to find a meeting. I need to find that, and it does something for me. I'm very grateful for the life that I have today. From the outside looking in, my life might not be much. Probably doesn't look like much at all. But from the inside, my life is everything. You know, I've got a roof over my head, lights that turn on, running water, all the things. I'm in my kids' lives, and they know that their mom loves them, that their mom is safe at night, that their mom will show up for them. I'm the kind of mom to my youngest that I've always wanted to be. And one of the hardest things that my older kids ever said to me was they say, they watch me with my youngest, and they say that they wish that had been the kind of mom that I could have been for them, which is hard. But it's also a tribute to who I am now and them telling me that they see the difference. And I love that I can be close with my kids. I love that I have that kind of life, that I can be close with my parents. And I have a lot of people close to me. My world used to be so small, so small. Sometimes it felt like I was the only one in it. And today I have so many people, I don't even know what to do with all the love that I have. You know, sometimes I wish there were more hours in a day and more days in a week, and that is not how I used to be at all. Just so I had more time. I am grateful that you guys let me come and speak, even though I'm not. Public speaking is not my thing. I work really hard, because I'm not a religious person, to find a higher power of my own. For me, That's not your typical thing, but I believe that all energy in the world is connected at a very basic level for me. And I believe in connection. That's my higher power. Like, that is something I didn't have outside these rooms. It's something I didn't have anywhere. I felt disconnected from everything, from myself. And when I go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I feel grounded. I leave there feeling like I can be me. And I wake up feeling like I can be me. And the relationships that I have formed in these rooms, I couldn't have those kinds of relationships outside. And so that connection I hold on to. And I know the difference that when I don't have meetings and I don't do the things that I normally do, I can see the difference in my emotional sobriety. I can see the difference in how patient a person I am. And, you know, even how kind I am. All of those things. Like, the more time that I spend outside of meetings, the harder it is to be in them sometimes for me. The pandemic was big for me like that. It was difficult to adjust back and forth. But there's nothing like being in a room of Alcoholics Anonymous, the energy that I feel, the kindness, just being surrounded by people who don't want anything from me other than just to see me happy and be there, to see me well. I used to be around a lot of people who liked me sick. Because the people, I mean, I'm much more easy to control when I'm sick. You know, I benefit them in other ways. And today I get to make my own choices and I have autonomy. That's a crazy thing for a girl like me to have. I am going through a new change in my life. I was with somebody for 11 years, the same person that I got clean and sober with. And recently we split up, and that was something that I didn't exactly see coming, but I am adjusting to. And I found that I'm okay. I'm okay in a way that I didn't think that I would be, because I'm okay on my own. I could never be alone before. You know, I always felt like I needed somebody to, I don't know, convince me that I'm worth being me or worthwhile of having. And I don't feel like that. There were people that were worried for me, you know, that said, well, what will you do without this person? And how will you, you know, and you know what? I'm okay. I felt that that sense of loneliness that I had felt for a long time, I don't feel anymore. And I wasn't expecting that. But I've been doing a lot of things. I've been working really hard at my job, you know, and just spending time on myself and with my family and with my kids and my friends. And I work a program of spiritual action, even if I'm not a lot of things that I do. You know, I'm of service and I pour myself into everything. And I've been on this like journey of like healing for myself. I've always been accountable for the things that I do and the things that I feel. And, you know, most of my relationships are amicable that have ended. You know, I am working towards having that kind of recovery, and hopefully I get to. I don't even know what to say. I am very grateful to be here. I feel bad that I'm like, yeah. But thank you so much for having me, and hopefully you got something out of that. That's all I got. Sorry.
Thank you so much for coming and sharing with us this morning. Let's give Jules another round of applause.